This conference will now be recorded.
Okay. good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new time, 8:30. I got word that the Olam wants to start a little earlier and have some time for questions afterwards. So it's always nice to feel appreciated. I really appreciate that. Shkoyach for the warm invite to start the shiur earlier. Tonight's topic is about Shvisas Roifim Umelamdim. So it's interesting. It's talking about going on strike. Are workers allowed to strike? So before we talk about if doctors can go on strike, or if teachers, rabbeim, can go on strike, or other essential workers, we have to first clarify what the laws, what the halachas of a worker is, and if there is a concept of striking, going on strike in the first place, and what's the framework of going on strike in halacha, and then we'll see if we can apply those concepts to a doctor or a rebbe or a mora or other essential workers. That's the question. Now, the Rambam, this is item base, the Rambam says in Hilchas Schiras, Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Zayin, this is going to build up the case, what the responsibilities of an employer are to the employee and vice versa, and then we'll see if we can figure out what the grounds would be if a worker wants to go on strike. So the Rambam says in Hilchas Schiras, Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Zayin, it's a fascinating Rambam. Zela Shoinu, so this is a quote from the Rambam. Kiderach Shemuzer Balabayas Shla Yigzol Schar Ani. Just as the Bal Habayas, just as the employer, is not allowed to steal the wages of the poor person, as if the employer is wealthy and the employee is poor. So it says, just as the employer, the Bal Habayas, is not allowed to steal the wages of the employee, the Rambam refers to him as the Ani, he can't withhold the wages. V'lo ya'ak venu, he can't withhold them. Kach ha'ani, so too the poor worker, is muzer, is also warned, shelo yigzol meleches bal habayis. So the worker is also warned not to steal the work of the bal habayis. V'yavatlu ma'at bekan u'ma'at bekan. He's not allowed to sort of cut corners. He's not allowed to waste a little bit of time over here, a little bit of time over there. So just like the employer can't steal and withhold the wages, so the employee is not allowed to steal from his employer either. How would the employee steal from the employer? How would the ani steal from the Bal Habayis? By wasting time. He's stealing the productivity of the Bal Habayis. He's not maximizing his time. He's being paid for his time. And if he doesn't maximize his time, he's also considered stealing from the Bal Habayis. Umoitzi kol hayoim b'me'eira, and he can just basically waste the entire day, like he can cause the day to go down the drain as if it was a wasteful day. Elachayev ledaktik al atzmoi bizman. So the employee is required to be precise, to be exact on himself. He has to be demanding on himself. Bizman, regarding the time when he punches in and when he punches out for the employer. The Rambam brings a raya from the Gemara in Brachas that we've learned. Shaharei hekpidu chachamim al bracha revias shel birkas hamazon. Because we see how far our sages went, that in the old days, when they used the bench, when they used to have the birkat hamazon, the fourth bracha, hatov v'hameitev, which is only rabbinic, so the Gemara there discusses that they waived the fourth bracha in order that the worker should not spend the extra few moments on the rabbinic blessing, the fourth rabbinic blessing of the benching, shelo yivarech osa. So he would recite the first three brachas. The first three brachas are deraisa, and even that, the Gemara there says at Tzad, that he would abbreviate the brachas and combine the brachas. And the fourth bracha, hatov v'hameitiv, which is only rabbinic, the worker, the employee, would skip entirely. The Poskim say nowadays we're given a lunch break and the employer is usually not makbid. So this halacha sort of, we're no longer particular because the assumption is that the worker has enough time to bench. But going back in the old days, in order to highlight the responsibility of a worker towards his employer, he would even be allowed, the Rambam cites the halacha that he even would be allowed to skip the fourth bracha of the benching because it's only rabbinic. Bechein chayev lavod b'kol kocho. Not only can't he waste time, he can't just slack off. But while he's working during the hours that's expected of him to work, he has to work bekol kocha. He has to work with all of his might. Shehare Yaakov Atzadik, because Yaakov, the great Yaakov Atzadik, our avos, the Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. So this is Yaakov, the patriarch Yaakov. So we know he was working for Lavan. Omar ki bekol koichi ovadati es avichem. He tells his wives Rachel and Leah that you know that I worked for your father with all of my might. Bekol koichi ovadati es avichem. So it's interesting because the Rambam refers to Yaakov as Yaakov Hatzadik, Yaakov who was so righteous and so and tzedek. He was so righteous and precise and accurate with his employer Lavan. Even though Lavan tried to trick Yaakov many times, but Yaakov did not trick his employer back. He didn't take those liberties. He worked with all his koyach, with all his strength, with all his might, for his father-in-law Lavan. Bekol koychi ovarti es avichem. See, even though the Rambam refers to Yaakov as Yaakov at Tzadik, but apparently, and the Gemara in Bab Metzia brings this, apparently this becomes a paradigm for us. This becomes sort of like the standard of how a Jew is supposed to work for his employer, that we can't slack off, we can't cut time, we can't cut corners, and while we're working as well, we have to put our full effort, our full koyach, into the avoida for the malacha, because we're being paid for our work. So it's the integrity of a worker towards his employer. But fikach, therefore, says the Rambam, not al schar zois af bo'elam hazeh. So the Rambam says, the Rambam attributes the reward that Yaakov received, that he became so wealthy with the spotted and the speckled and the circled, with all the flock that Yaakov was able to acquire, that grew, that was produced into his possession. He was able to sell it and buy slaves, buy servants, and buy merchandise, and buy chattel. So all of this was a reward, even in this world, for Yaakov, for Yaakov's integrity towards his employer. So this is on one side. On one side, the responsibility of the worker to work for his employer honestly and with integrity, and not to slack off, and to apply himself with all of his might. Nowadays, probably this would translate into, during the working hours, you can't be browsing on the internet. You can't be shopping on the internet or doing who knows what. You have to be working for your employer. That's how it would translate into nowadays time. Now, there's a Gemara in Bab Metzia, in Perek Secher Se'umnin, Perek Vav of Bab Metzia, and the Gemara in Bab Metzia, and this is all cited in Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat, Shin Lamed Gimel, 333, in the Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat, the actual rules governing the contract between the employer and the employee. So in Perek HaSecher Se'umnin, it's the sixth Perek in Bab Metzia, the Gemara says, the Gemara lays down the parameters. Acher shekvar hischel hapoyel in the malacha. So the halacha is like this. Once the employer hires workers, and the workers began the job, they went to the construction site, they brought their buckets to the field, they brought their plows to the field, whatever the job was, once the workers arrive at the site and begin their malacha, so it says that the Baal HaBayis is not allowed to break the contract. The Baal HaBayis is obligated to allow the workers to work, and he basically has a commitment to the workers that he has to pay them their salary. If they expected to work today from a 9-to-5 job and get paid a certain amount, so once they started their job, it's almost like a kinyan. It's like it was the contract was solidified, the contract began, and the employer is not allowed to break the contract. The Im Chazar, if the Baal HaBayis does break the contract. So the Gemara says he has to pay the workers their full salary, what they would have earned that day. So he already committed himself to the workers. Now the Gemara says, I put it in brackets, kepayel batel, a worker who's not working. In other words, the fact that the workers were given, imagine if the employer, the Baal HaBayis, breaks the contract and he says at the last minute, you know what, you showed up for the job, but I decided I'm not going to do the job. So the workers deserve to be compensated because they already started the job. The employer has to pay the workers whatever salary he promised them that day. However, a payal batal. We recognize that they're not working. They got an unexpected vacation day. So they're essentially getting a paid vacation. So the Gemara says the fact that they don't have to work itself has value. So the salary is reduced to acknowledge, to factor in the fact that they're not working. So the Gemara has a formula how you would figure that out. Imagine if $100 a day for heavy labor, you're not working today, you got a free vacation, so instead you get paid the $80, the $70, the $75. We would have to factor in kepoyel batel. This is actually what happened in during the corona, during the virus, when you have all of these agreements between babysitters, daycare, and families, that we can't send our kids to the daycare. On the other hand, they were expecting to be paid. So a lot of different psharas, a lot of different compromises were established to pay a fraction of the salary. And we take into account the fact that the employee doesn't have to work. So we factor that in as well, because not having to work itself has value. And therefore, that will be reflected in the amount that you're receiving. But the concept is that the employer is committed to pay the salary to the worker. Once the worker started working, there's like a kinyan. If I retract, if the balabais, if the employer retracts, breaks the contract, he has to still pay their wage, but we factor in the fact that they're not working, kipoyel batel. Now, the poyel himself, the worker himself, so imagine if he was supposed to work from 9 to 5, an 8-hour day, and he decides to break the contract in the middle of the day, after 4 hours. So what are the schusim, what are the rights and the responsibilities of the worker? So the Gemara says that the worker, unlike the balabais, the worker has a schus chazara. The worker has an automatic right to break the contract. Why is that? Because the Torah gives him that right. The Torah says, avodayim. The pasuk says, you are my servants. I took you out of Mitzrayim. Hashem says to us, I took you out of Egypt. You are my servants. And the Gemara makes a drasha. Avodayim, you are my servants, but you are not allowed or required to be servants to other servants. So essentially, just like it's forbidden for a person to sell himself into slavery, there are certain extenuating circumstances where the person would steal and be sold into slavery, or he would be impoverished and he would have to sell himself into slavery. But by and large, it's forbidden to sell yourself into slavery. So the Gemara says, essentially, if a worker would be bound and can't retract, he can't get out, if there's no way out, if there's no exit strategy for the worker, essentially he's selling himself into slavery. You're not allowed to sell yourself into slavery, and we always have a schus to not be considered to be slaves to a baser v'dam. We're servants to a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not servants to a baser v'dam. Avodayim v'lo avodai avodim la'avodim. So a worker is allowed to retract. So imagine if the worker worked four hours half the day, a poil yachal lachzor afilu b'chatzi hayom. A worker can back out even in the middle of a job. Now, what would that mean? That would mean that if the person was working for and it was an 8-hour job, and he was hired for the hours, and he decided to break the contract in the middle of the day, so we would amortize the salary over the 8 hours, and whatever he worked, he'd be paid for. He'd be compensated for. He's not penalized for backing out. If the employer backs out, so he's the one who's doing the hiring. He's not a slave to anybody. He's the one who's giving the job. So he doesn't have the right to break the contract. And if he does, he's going to have to compensate the worker as a poyel batel. We take into account the fact that the worker has it easier, that he's not having to work. So we'll give him the paid vacation package. He'll get less than he would have had he worked, but he gets paid. But the worker himself is not a slave to the employer. He has rights. He's allowed to back out. So if he breaks the contract and backs out, he will be compensated for the amount of hours that he already worked, and he's not penalized. Now, that's the halacha of avodayim v'avodim la'avodim. The poel is allowed to back out. Now, the halacha says, but that's only if backing out will not cause a loss to the balabais. Now, it might be hard for the balabais to find the worker to come in the middle of the day. That's not considered a loss. If the work is going to be postponed till the next day, that's not considered causing a loss to the balabais. But if the work is time sensitive, so the Gemara gives examples, that you are soaking your flax in the vat, whatever, and it has to be removed in a certain time. Now the worker backs out, and now the flax is threatened to get ruined. Or you hired a caterer for a chasana, where it's time sensitive. Or loyalenu, the Gemara gives other examples where you hired the instruments they used to play. Apparently, they used to have people come and cry at the funeral or play certain instruments at the chalilim, flutes or what have you, at the funeral, and it's time sensitive. When you back out, it's going to cause the employer a loss. It's an irretrievable loss because I was relying on you. So then it says in the Gemara, the poel is not allowed to back out, because forget about being avadim, you're simply causing a loss to the employer. It's more than just postponing the job till tomorrow, you're actually causing him a loss. So if the worker would back out, would retract, causing the employer an irretrievable loss. So the Gemara says, maton, this is the end of item gimel, maton. So the employer has recourse. The employer could either fool the worker into finishing the job, he can offer them more money, and then later pay them their regular agreed upon salary. It's interesting. You can fool the worker into coming back to the job because he wasn't allowed to back out in the first place. He's still bound by the original contract. So whatever it takes to get them to fulfill their original obligation, you can do. You can even fool them, even though you're not gonna pay them that much. Or you can withhold the wages that they worked until now. Imagine if they worked 4 hours. Ordinarily, you owe them the 4 hours worth of work because they're allowed to retract because they're not slaves. But if they're causing me a loss, I'm allowed to withhold those wages and use those wages towards paying the next worker more to get him to come in the emergency in the middle of the day to finish up the job that the first worker started. So matan o sochar aleihem b'scharam hanasheres etzlo, you can either fool the workers to get them to come back because they really shouldn't have backed out in the first place, or you can withhold the wages that are due to them. They did work half the day, and you can use those wages towards hiring the next. Essentially, you'd be able to pay the next worker who's agreeing to come in the middle of the job. You can pay him double what he normally would get, all in order to avoid the loss. If the worker has an ones, the worker becomes an avel, or the worker gets sick, or it says there his wife or children get sick. It's interesting that the worker is allowed to quit because he has family obligations back at home. That's considered an ones. It's considered a circumstance beyond his control. Then he's not responsible. We go back to the letter of the law that the worker can break his contract because he's not a slave. And in addition, he's not penalized because he's not responsible. If it's an oinus, it was beyond his control, and he gets paid for the half of the day that he worked. This is the halacha. This is one of the sources that we learned. Michael, we actually learned this last night, that a worker is that anybody is not responsible for garmi. He's not responsible for indirectly causing a loss if it's an oinus. Okay. So whatever way it would work, if the person backs out and breaks the contract, we would amortize the wage over the amount of time that he worked. By the way, in halacha, we're not going to focus on this too much. In halacha, there's no concept of a sick day. Tosfos in Kedushin on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph says that a slave, if you purchased in the old days, if you purchased an Eved Ivri, even a Jewish slave, and the Eved Ivri gets sick, so he doesn't have to, after all, I gave the Eved Ivri, let's say, $5,000 to purchase him because he needed the money for 6 years, and the Eved Ivri gets sick for 1, 2, or 3 years, he doesn't have to reimburse me the money that I gave him to purchase him. And the Rishonim say, that's because you acquired him. You're paying for the kinyan. You're not paying for the hours. You're not paying for the work. You're paying for the kinyan. You're paying for the acquisition, as if you bought a house and something happens to the house after. But when you're paying a worker for his time, if a worker would get sick, so he's not compensated for the time that he's not working. So going back to our case, if the worker backs out, he's entitled to back out. He can get paid and get compensated for the amount of time that he's worked until now. But he's obviously not paid for the rest of the day. Even if we don't penalize him for backing out, we can't withhold the wages of the first half of the day, but he's obviously not paid for the rest of the day. If a worker has a longer contract and gets sick, so in halacha, there's no concept of a sick day. I don't have to compensate him for the time that he wasn't working. Obviously, there could be agreements or a shibudim or a schaivasin. What's expected nowadays might be different. But in terms of halacha, there's no obligation. As far as the agreement, it's understood that you're getting paid for the work. So these are the halachas of a worker. Number one, the Rambam says that the worker has to give it his all. However, at the same time, the worker is not a slave. If he wants to quit the job, he can quit the job. If he agrees to work, then the Rambam says you have to give it your all. But if you decide to break the contract, then under normal circumstances, the worker is allowed, it has the right to break the contract, he's compensated for the amount of time that he did work, and he's not penalized. However, if it's a davar ha'avud, if he's causing the employer a loss, then the halacha is that the worker is not allowed to break the contract. It would be equivalent to garmi. It's as if he's indirectly causing the employer a loss. He might even have to compensate for that loss, and the employer has a recourse to withhold the wages and use the wages towards the next worker who can get paid extra for coming in at the last minute and finishing up the job. So those are the parameters of the relationship between an employer and an employee. He has to work as hard as he can, but he has the right to back out, but not if it's causing the employer a loss. We see from here in item Dalit.
What if the employee shows up? Employees show up, as you said, onto the job site.
Right.
And before anyone starts working, the balabus cancels the job.
Yeah. So again, it depends. If the balabus has an oinus, so the Gemara says going to the work site is considered taking the job. So the employee. So there are a few factors here. If it's still enough, you know, the way it used to work in the old days, you stand there on the corner, you're waiting for a job. So if you can still go back, if it's early enough in the day and you can still find the job, so then the employer didn't cause you a loss and they don't have to reimburse. Okay. The Gemara says you have tarumis. You have the right to be disgruntled, to be upset. You have tarumis. You have the right to be upset, but you didn't really get a loss. If I did cause you a loss, the employer would be required to compensate. And even if there were no other jobs that day, so you can say I didn't cause you a loss, but the fact that you came down to the work site means you started the job, and that already created a binding relationship between the employer and the employee, and the employer would have to compensate even if I didn't cause you a loss, because you wouldn't have had another job anyway. But once you came to the work site, even if I didn't cause you a loss, you're already in contract. Once you're in contract, I have to reimburse. However, I have to honor the salary. However, we factor in the fact that you're not working, so you're getting a paid vacation. It's different than putting in the full hours and having to work. Now, to summarize, in Dalit, in item Dalit, so a poel has the right to back out, but we don't find that he has the right to strike. Right? I wrote the word strike in English. He doesn't have the right to strike. Hashpasa. He doesn't have the right to strike. On the contrary, the Rambam says that if you agree to work, you have to work, you have to give it your all. You have the right to quit altogether, but you don't have the right to strike. Now, just for clarity, what does striking mean? Striking means that you want to hold on to the job. You're not giving up the job, but you're not going to work. Either it's some kind of passive resistance that you're coming into the job and you're working sluggishly, or you're not coming to work at all and there's some kind of picket line outside and you have those, you're wearing those cardboard signs outside walking around the block. You're not coming to work. You want to hold on to the job, but you're not working. That's a strike. That's what a strike means. You have the right to quit. You have the right to work and give it your all. But do you have the right to strike? So the Rambam says you don't, because striking means to hold on to the job, but not give it your all. Either you're working sluggishly or you're not working at all. Another aspect of striking is that you're not even allowed, it's totally unacceptable in America, that if the workers are striking, it's totally unacceptable for the employer to hire other workers in their stead. And it would be frowned upon for those other workers to replace the workers that are on strike. That's very frowned upon. So striking has two connotations. Number one, you're not working even though you're not quitting. You're holding on to the job and you're not working. And number two, you're not allowing other people to replace you. All of those go into what a strike is. So we're going to discuss now, and we're going to explore in halacha, the concept of striking. And the reason why it's very important to compare it basically in the context that we set up is because so far we don't find any room to strike. You have a choice to work, like the Rambam says, to work as hard as you can, or you have the right to quit and get compensated for what you've done until now, as long as you're not causing an irretrievable loss. But we don't find that you have the schus to hold on to the job and just basically block anybody from finishing the job until you're on strike. Why are you on strike? You're on strike because you want to renegotiate the salary, or you're on strike because of some other terms of employment, you want to improve the quality of the workplace, whatever reason why you're on strike, but you're holding on to the job, and at the same time you're not doing the job, and you're not allowing anybody to replace you, that's what being on strike means. Now, it's very interesting. We have examples in the Gemara where the workers went on strike. And believe it or not, it wasn't just any worker. It was a workers in the Beis HaMikdash itself, in the most holy of places. Even the Beis HaMikdash itself is not free from these difficulties. Sometimes the workers in the Beis HaMikdash itself would go on strike for better terms of employment or who knows what. So the Gemara says in Yuma, on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, that there were a few families that were expertise. There was a family named Beis Garmo. Beis Garmo knew how to bake the Lechem Hapanim. The Lechem Hapanim, if you ever look in the pictures in the Art Scroll Chumash in the back, or you look in the Tabernacle books, the Lechem Hapanim was a very interesting bread. There were 12 breads. It was the way they would do it. It was matzah. It was unleavened bread. They wouldn't allow the bread to rise to leaven. It was a thick dough. It was a dough that was a tefach thick, a couple of inches, like three to four inches thick. They would have a flat piece of dough, like a pizza dough, flat piece of dough, and then they would fold up the sides to be like a box. It was a very delicate, and then you'd be baking this, and you'd have to take this out of the oven delicately because you can break the dough, and you have to do it 12 times because there are 12 loaves. It wasn't the way we think of a loaf. It wasn't a matzah the way we have our matzah, and it wasn't like a challah, like a loaf of bread. It was unleavened bread that was folded into a box or folded like a ship. The Gemara Menachos discusses it. So it had walls and many sides and many vantage points, and it was a very delicate bread, the lechem upon it. So there was a family named Beis Garmo, the family of the house of Garmo, and they were experts at baking this bread. Now, there was another story, the Beis Avtinas. Beis Avtinas were expert in the spices of the Ketores, similar. And they knew how to put a certain spice in that would be Mala Ashan. It would make the smoke, the cloud of smoke, rise in a perfect column of smoke, and it would be a beautiful Kiddush Hashem. The avodah would be done perfectly. So you have these two families that were expertise in their respective trades, one in baking and one in the spices. So it says, it happened that these families once got upset. They got upset over their working conditions. They got upset over their payment. So the Gemara says, Beis Garmu, I'm quoting the Gemara in Ivan Hay, Beis Garmu hayu bikiyin b'maisa lechem apanam. The family of Garmo were experts in baking the lechem hapanim. The leiratzu lelamed, and they refused to teach the secret of the lechem hapanim to anybody else. Sholchu chachamim veviu umnin melachsandri shel mitzrayim. So the chachamim, so the Beis Garmo once went on strike. The chachamim were desperate, and they brought experts, expert bakers from Alexandria of Egypt. And they knew how to bake also. But they didn't know how to take the bread delicately out of the oven. And every time they would take the bread out of the oven, invariably it would crack, it would smash, and the breads would be ruined. So you have to do this 12 times. Maybe they managed to take one or two out of the oven, but they certainly wouldn't get all 12 out of the oven. You have to bake 12 of these breads every Friday. So these Alexandria, these Egyptian Alexandria bakers, they came up with the idea, maybe we'll bake the breads outside the oven, just over an open fire, and that way we won't have to tease the bread off the side of the oven. We'll be able to take the breads. Hopefully the breads will last. But then, since they baked it out of the oven, it says, halalu pitan misafshois. The bread would spoil because the bread was out in the air. It wasn't in the confines. It wouldn't have the evenly distributed heat of the oven. Halalu ein pitan misafshois. And the Beis Garmu, they knew how to bake the bread inside the oven itself. Kishishamu chachamim medavar. So when the chachamim realized the extent of the problem, that the Beis Garmu are not working, and our replacement workers are not able to do it, so Amru, they tried to convince the Beis Garmu to come back. Ko ma shebara kadosh baruch hu lechvoidei baru. You have a skill of baking the bread. Everything Hashem created in this world is for Hashem's honor. Shenemar, as it says, the pasuk says that everything that I created for my honor, Hashem says. So all the talents that we have, all the koiches that we have, are all supposed to be devoted to bring honor to Hashem. So, chazru beis garmu limkoimu, and the beis garmu, they went back to their place. It's not clear what it means, but in the meantime, they're still on strike. Sholchu lehem chachamim, the chachamim sent for these beis garmu, v'loi ba'u, and they refused to come. Kaflu lehem scharan, so they doubled their wages, u'ba'u, and then they came. And the Gemara tells us, by the way, the Gemara tells us that the worker is the beis garmu, and the same story, almost the exact same story applied to the beis aftinas, Michael, like you said, with the ones who were expert in the spices, the incense offering that was brought twice a day. So it says there that they're paid with the machzis ha-shekel. They're paid from the shkalim. They were paid from the lishka. They were paid from the coins that were collected from the beis hamikdash, even though the money was collected and the money is hektish, but they were paid from the hektish treasury. And it says, b'kol yoyim noitlam shnayim aser mana, they used to take 1,200 mana. From this point on, they doubled the wage for 24. So here we have examples of the beis garmu and the beis aftinas, where they refused to work. It doesn't quite say what they were upset about, but they refused to work. And not only did they refuse to work, they essentially withheld, they blocked anybody else from taking over the job. They didn't physically stand there on a picket line, but they didn't allow anybody else to come in because nobody else knew how to do it. So essentially they're holding on to the job and they're not allowing other people to come in. So this would seemingly be an example of the imyan of hashpasa, the concept of going on strike. But however, it's not a proof to anything, because adrabba, the Gemara says on the contrary. The Gemara says that the chachamim were very unhappy with their behavior, and kasfu aleim shem chatu b'inyan zeh, and the Mishnah in Yuma cites that they were considered rishoyim, they were considered wicked in this area. It was held against them. They were criticized for this. They were not allowed to do this. So we see from here that there's no makar, there's no source that the workers have a schus lahashbis, to go on strike, like the word shabbos, to rest, to abdicate, to go on strike. Lahachriach habalabayis lahalascharam. We don't have a source in the Gemara that the workers are going on strike, keeping on the job, holding on to their job and disallowing anybody else from replacing them and taking their place. We do not have a source. We have a source of disgruntled workers. We have stories of workers refusing to come to work. We have stories of workers not teaching the tricks of the trade to the succession plan, not creating a succession plan. But we do not have an example of it being looked at favorably. We do not have an example that it was considered from their rights. It's just interesting. So we're sitting here criticizing the beis garmu. Just to end on a good note, to their credit, the Gemara tells us that their families never ate pastakia, never ate like fresh white bread, because it was marzayin. They didn't want anybody to think that they were using their skills of the lechem hapanim towards personal use. And the same thing with the beis aftinas, that their daughters-in-law did not go with fancy perfumes, because lest someone say that they were using their talents that were devoted to the Beis HaMikdash for personal use. So they were not using their office for their own personal use. However, for whatever reason, they were upset at the working conditions in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says there that they said the reason why they refused to teach it to anybody else was because they were afraid that this skill would one day be used towards Avodah Zarah. So therefore, since they were afraid that it would be misused and abused for Avodah Zarah, that was the excuse that they gave why they didn't want to teach it to anybody else. Whether or not that was why they really didn't want to, or they were trying to hold on to it, the Gemara, at the end of the day, they're criticized. But in any case, that's the furthest we got in the Gemara. Okay. Now, there's another Gemara in Bava Basra. On Ches Amud Beis, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that a community is allowed to extra legally, beyond the law, they're able to make certain conditions for themselves. So this is item Vav, a Gemara in Bava Basra, Ches Amud Beis. Rashoyin b'nehu ir lahasnois alamidos. So a city is allowed, and the Gemara in Bava Basra talk about this all the time. A city is allowed to stipulate regarding their midos. So for example, a gallon. You go into the store and you pay for a gallon of water, a gallon of juice, a gallon of soda, milk, whatever it is. So you can have a city, and they can say, in this city, a gallon is either larger than what a normal gallon is, or the gallon could be smaller than what a normal gallon is. Like, for example, I believe in Canada, they switched the gallons of gas to the liters of gas. There was a transition. They switched from gallon to liter. A country is allowed to change its metric system, or it's allowed to even add on to the midos. And the Gemara in Bava Basra discusses where a merchant has to be aware of the fact that when he's going into another city, he might charge you $5 a gallon, but the gallon might be larger. So the buyer might be expecting a larger gallon, and so on. The people in a city have the right to do that. V'ala sha'arim, they're also allowed to fix the price. They can be a price fixing. V'al schar poyalim, or they can establish a certain wage, a minimum wage. A city is allowed to establish these things for its inhabitants. Ulahasiya al kitzan, and they're also allowed to be nesiya al kitzan. It's a difficult expression. Rashi explains that they are allowed to punish those that violate the agreements that the community made. The Gemara gives us an illustration of this on Tesamad Aleph from Bava Basra. Hanu bei trei tavti, there were these two butchers, the avdi inyan of hani adadi, and they made an agreement among themselves. The commander of it biyomid the chavre nekrua lemashche. So you have two butchers, they're trying to share the parnasa. They have a deal. I'm going to work on Sunday, you work on Monday. I'm going to work on Tuesday, you work on Wednesday. Anybody who infringes on the day of his friend will tear up the hides of the animal that he shechted that day. In other words, essentially, we're going to confiscate his merchandise for infringing on his friend's day. These two butchers, they made such a deal. Once, Ozel Chabinayu Ovid B'yoy Medechavrei. There was one butcher, he infringed and he violated the terms of the deal, and he worked on the day of his friend, Karol Amashke. So his friend, we agreed on this, his friend tore up the hide. In other words, he confiscated, he destroyed the merchandise. Also, Lakami the Rava, they came before Rava. Chayvinu Rava Lashlume, and Rava obligated the butcher who confiscated the merchandise, who tore up the hide, to reimburse the butcher who was in violation of the agreement. Not like we just said. But doesn't it say that the workers are allowed to make these agreements and to penalize and to confiscate the merchandise of those who of the violators? They're allowed to create these standards. Loya hardale Rava. Rava was quiet. Rava didn't answer. Now it's very interesting why Rava didn't answer. Look what Rapapa says. Rapapa says shaper of it loya hardale. Rava was right for not answering because what Rava was right. That in this particular case, the butchers were not allowed to make these stipulations among themselves. Hani mili heicha v'leka adam chashuv. Because when there's a prominent person in the city, Rava himself was a prominent person in the city. Hainu davka going. So says the halacha. Hani mili heicha v'leka adam chashuv. The only time the workers can make these rules among themselves is when there's no prominent person in the city. But if there's a prominent person, but when there's a prominent person in the city, they cannot privately make these arrangements without running it by the prominent person in the city. So now the prominent person, Rava happened to have been a great sage, and he happened to have been one of the sages of the Talmud, and there's no question about that, but that's not the criteria for Adam Chashev regarding this halacha. The criteria of Adam Chashev is not that he darshans every week or that he teaches. The criteria of Adam Chashev is that he takes responsibility for the workers of his city. Somebody, it doesn't even have to be a major Talmud Chacham, somebody who is the governor, somebody who, whatever it is, somebody who takes responsibility for the workers, for his citizens and his community. He's the Adam Chashev, and everything has to be run through him in deference to the fact that he's taking responsibility for all his workers. That's why Rava didn't respond. And so it's fascinating because when they went to Rava and they said, we have an agreement among ourselves and my partner, the other butcher, my competition, so he violated the terms of the agreement, so therefore I penalized him. Rava said you have to reimburse him because you weren't allowed to do that. But Rava didn't explain why. It seems like in Rava's humility, Rava didn't want to say that I am the prominent person in this city. He didn't want to articulate that. So it took Rav Papa to say that the reason why Rav Papa ruled the way, the reason why Rava ruled the way he did was because when there's a prominent person in the community, which was Rava in this case, Rava didn't want to stick up for himself. When there's a prominent person in the community, then you have to run it by him because he's the one who's taking achrayus. He's the one who's taking responsibility for everything that's going on in the city. The Rush brings this Gemara lahalacha, the Rush in the back of the Gemara. Mikan, we see from here, this is item Zion, the kol bali umnis yecholim lahasnis b'neihem, that the workers, what's it called? The workers' guild. The workers, they are allowed to stipulate among themselves. Behem the crime. I'm sorry?
Collective bargaining.
They can stipulate among themselves. Behem the crime b'nehu ir b'inyin melacha. So the Rush takes out from this Gemara, just to clarify, the words of the Gemara were that the b'nehu ir, the people, the inhabitants of the city. In the Gemara's story, in the anecdote in the Gemara, it was two butchers that were making this stipulation. And the only reason why they were wrong was because they slighted Rava, who was the prominent person in the city. Had they run it by Rava, or had there not been a Rava in the city, then the two butchers would have been justified in creating this standard, this working practice among themselves. So the Rush says, you see from here, that B'nai Ho'ir, the members of the city, doesn't mean the inhabitants of the city, it means the workers of the city. So if you have butchers, if there are only two butchers in the city, and the Poskim say the majority of the butchers, so imagine if there are three butchers in the city, and two out of the three create this standard, that's binding on all the other butchers in the city. You don't need the entire city to agree to this. You need each sector, each profession could make this rule among themselves. And that's when there's no Adam Chashev, but if there is an Adam Chashev, then the Rush explains, that's referring to somebody like Rava, who is the Rosh and the Manhig of the year. He's the one where all the affairs of the city go through him. That's what the Adam Chashev means. Bafilu kol b'nei o'ir, this might be a question in the Paiskin, but even if the entire city agrees to something, you have to run it through. It has to be stamped, a seal of approval, by the Adam Chashev of the city. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that, by and large, we don't have somebody like this nowadays. We don't have somebody in the city that is the Adam Chashev of the city. Perhaps you can have, I don't know, maybe in Washington Heights, maybe in Broyers, maybe there's some kind of kehilla where you might have an Adam Chashev who literally is looking out for the welfare of everybody in the community. But Rav Moshe says, by and large, we don't have such a thing. So we might not have the condition of an Adam Chashev, but we certainly have workers in a certain field making private agreements among themselves, and as long as the majority of the workers in that profession agree to a certain standard, a certain rule, so that's binding on everybody else. So that's what we have. So we have the idea that a worker has to work as hard as he can. We have the idea that a worker is allowed to back out, and usually he's compensated unless he's causing a loss, then he's not allowed to back out, and if he does back out, he's penalized. We have a story in the Gemara where the people in the Beis HaMikdash themselves refused to come to work, but they were criticized. And then we have a Gemara in Baba Basra that the workers among themselves, and if there's an Adam Chashev, they have to run it by the Adam Chashev to get his blessing, but they are allowed to create standards and procedures for themselves. Okay, now, Rav Aaron Cutler in Mishnas Rav Aaron, Siman Ayin Aleph, says, let's talk about the workers. This, we're going to break it down slowly. Let's talk about workers who are causing a loss even by quitting. So we said before that forget about going on strike. You can't even cause a loss to your employer, an irretrievable loss. So Rav Aaron Cutler says like this, maybe Dina de Malchusa Dina, where the fact that the country does establish laws, I believe now, you can, the lawyers among us can correct me if I'm wrong, but the country, the Medina, did establish worker rights, that they have a right to strike. I don't know if there's a procedure, if they have to go through some kind of procedure first, but they have to give the employer advance notice, and they're allowed to strike. I remember when I was living in Canada, there was, for a couple of weeks, there was a bus strike. So there was no public transportation in the city. Sometimes you have an airline strike, and the pilots and the airline crew is striking. Or sometimes you have other strikes. Very often you have the garbage men, the sanitation department strikes, and you go on strike. So nowadays, it's accepted, and the government allows the workers to go on strike. So there is a concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina. It's interesting because Dina de Malchusa Dina is not clear at all in Halacha, and there's a Machlokes, exactly the parameters of Dina de Malchusa Dina. So says Rav Aaron Cutler that he entertains the notion that Dina de Malchusa Dina would allow workers to strike. But what about if you're causing a loss? We said before that you can't even quit. Forget about going on strike. You can't even quit if it's going to cause a loss. And in normative halacha, if you would cause a loss, the employer would be able to, there would be a recourse. And you might even have to reimburse the employer for causing a loss of his merchandise. You didn't take the flax out of the vat on time. So you're causing a loss. Garmi, you might even be obligated to reimburse the employer. So can the minhag of the Medina, or could the rule of the Medina permit us to actually damage somebody else? We know that Dina de Malchusa Dina doesn't allow us to do Averis. We can't sin. We can't violate Shabbos just because of Dina de Malchusa. They want you to come on Saturday. You can't violate Shabbos. Am I allowed to violate Halacha and cause somebody a loss? So Rav Aaron Cutler feels that he's inclined to think that that this would be under the purview of Dina de Malchusa Dina, even to back out or to go on strike when it causes the employer a loss, if you're justified in improving your working conditions, your salary, or the working environment, whatever it is. Why? Because Dina de Malchusa Dina essentially is like the king or the government or the people have the right to act as a bezdin and be mafkir the mamon. Why can't I cause you a loss? Because I'm not allowed to damage your property. There's an iser mazik. But if the country agrees that that's within the new rights of the worker, so it's as if the country is declaring the employer's merchandise ownerless, and therefore the workers are allowed to strike, even resulting in a loss to the employer, because that's the agreement of the country. Dina de Malchusa Dina applies to monetary, to money matters. So they can even require someone to absorb a loss. So Rav Aaron Cutler is inclined to think that based on the Ramah's opinion that Dina de Malchusa Dina applies to all monetary matters, as long as it was established fairly and it was established for the purpose of the king or for the purpose for the good of the country, we can apply the rule of Dina de Malchusa Dina. It's as if it's a Hefker Bezdin. It's as if the Bezdin has the right to declare someone's money ownerless. We have that in the Gemara, even for a Dabar HaAvod. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, what about the idea of preventing someone else from working? Rav Moshe Feinstein also in Choshe Mishpat Chelek Aleph Siman Nun Tes cites the Gemara in Baba Basra that we just cited, that one butcher, had it not been for Adam Chashev, one butcher has the right to prevent the other butcher from working on his day. So if we establish that, like we put together what Rav Aaron Cutler said and what Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if the Dina de Malchusa allows you to quit or to not work, in spite of the fact that you're causing a loss, then we can very simply apply the Gemara in Baba Basra that it would prevent other workers from usurping and coming in and taking over. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. If you notice in item Ches, so I put there in the parentheses, I put unions. Leha unions, I spelled it out in Hebrew, Rav Moshe Feinstein uses that expression. This is a makor. This Gemara in Baba Basra is a makor to the din of a union, that they have the right to go on strike in order to raise their, to improve their wages or to improve their working conditions, and they can even prevent other people from coming in, because just like the butchers. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein gets into technicalities. What if the other fellow who wants to usurp and take over your job is not part of the union? Because the Gemara says you have to be the B'nai Ho'ir. You have to be the majority of the people in the profession. So just because some people are part of a union, not everyone buys into the union. So are they bound by the agreements of the union? Maybe somebody else could break the picket line and take over the job. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, but maybe not, because the people that are part of the union and they're striking, if you would come in, you would be undermining their parnasa. It's like Hasagas Gvul, or it's like Pasakta L'chiyusoi. It's as if you're taking away my job. So whether it's because of the ability of the Gemara Baba Basra, or whether it's because it's my job and I have the right to strike and you can't come in and take over my job because you're causing me a loss of parnasa, at the end of the day, both Rav Aaron and Rav Moshe, Zichronim Levracha, felt that there is a makor in halacha when it comes to monetary money matters to be able to go on strike. Now, what about Rabbeim going on strike? What about Rabbeim? So this is something, so we all know that Klei Kodesh are underpaid and they deserve our appreciation a lot more. And the Rebbeim and the teachers and the Moros teaching our children, we try to show them as much appreciation as we can. But they're underpaid. Sometimes they have the stress of Parnassa, and sometimes the Rebbeim, the cost of living goes up, and the Rebbeim want to increase the salary even in the middle of the year. They want to renegotiate their salary. They want to renegotiate their contract for next year. The Hanhala, the administration, is not responsive. The Balabatim are not responsive. So what leverage do the Rebbeim have? So on the one hand, they're workers. And Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal and Rav Aaron Cutler Zatzal said that you're allowed to strike. There's room. There's makum. There is room in halacha to strike. So maybe the Rebbeim can strike. So says the Poskim in Shvisas Melamdim, if Rebbeim or teachers want to go on strike, not only that, they want to prevent the school from hiring a substitute. So the Ramah, going back to the basic halacha, the Ramah says that causing a loss of time of limud, the children, the Rebbeim were hired to teach the children. Kashbar, Tinoik Yishol Beis Rabban. The whole Klal Yisrael, the whole world, is based on the Hevel Pihem of Tinoik Yishol Beis Rabban. The whole world exists based on the merit of the pure, holy Torah study of the children. You watch a child learning, it's incredible how pure it is, how that there's no cynicism, there's no skepticism. Sitting down and learning a pasuk in chumash, learning a Gemara, for a 10-year-old boy to be sitting there struggling over a piece of Gemara, that's like basically the most powerful, that's like an atom bomb. It's basically the most powerful thing in the world to see a child learning where he's learning about Avraham Avinu. He's learning about Avraham Avinu. That's the most powerful thing in the world. So says the Ramah that for a Rebbe to take off and to waste the time that the children aren't learning, that's a davar ha'avud. That's an irretrievable loss. And we already established from the Gemara in Bava Metzia that a worker is never allowed to cause an irretrievable loss. Now, what did Rav Aaron Cutler say? This is brilliant how simple it is. What did Rav Aaron Cutler say? Rav Aaron Cutler said, well, when it comes to monetary issues, we can apply the klal of Hefker Bezdin, that the Bezdin, the country, the government, or whoever's in charge, they have the right to sort of declare it ownerless. They have the right to absorb the loss. They can force the employer to absorb the loss. But that's when it comes to monetary issues. When it comes to Isser Veheter, imagine if the government would say you have to eat not kosher. So how can the government allow for the loss of the children learning for Bittul Torah? That's monetary. That's already Yaradeya. That's Isser Veheter. That's a mitzvah. So of course they can't require the children to absorb the loss of not being able to learn Torah. So the Malamdim simply, it's an Isser Deraisa. So Dina de Machusa Dina doesn't allow us to violate prohibitions from the Torah. So an ordinary worker can withhold the work and he can cause a loss to the employer perhaps, because a Dina de Machusa Dina is required to absorb the loss. But how can you require the children or the parents of the children to absorb the loss of their children not reaching their potential, not learning as much as they should be learning? How can you cause, we're not talking about overworking the children, of course the children have to be given their recess and their benazmanim, their break, their summer break, but how can you waste time from the children's curriculum if that's what the children need in order to thrive? So Rav Aaron Cutler says that in his opinion, it's absolutely forbidden, there's no basis for a Rebbe to go on strike, or even the general studies teacher, it's unhealthy for the children's ruchnius. It's unhealthy for the children's ruchnius to be able to go on strike, even for the general studies teacher. And Dina de Malchusa doesn't speak to that because we can't allow you to do a prohibition based on Dina de Malchusa Dina. Certainly, it goes without saying that the Rebbe can't pick it outside and prevent the someone else from taking the job. So I know that in certain communities, now before we go further, so both Rav Aaron and Rav Moshe, they both say that, of course, it's incumbent on the Balabatim, the Menahel, the Hanhalas HaYeshiva, the administration, to make sure that the Rebbeim are properly compensated. But they don't have the recourse of going on strike. Now, I know I've heard of cases where sometimes what the Rebbeim do is that they pull the kids out and they teach the kids in the privacy of their own home. So the learning goes on uninterrupted, but the yeshiva falls apart, right? Because all the classes are being held in the Rebbeim's dining rooms, and they're not in, what kind of principle is that if he doesn't have any classes operating in the building? So the kids are learning, but the school is falling apart because the school is not paying, is not taking care of its Rebbeim. But they can't stop the kids from learning. That's what Rabbi Aaron Cutler says. It's an amazing idea. Rav Moshe Feinstein says another brilliant idea. Let's pause for a minute. How is the Rebbe getting paid in the first place? You can't charge for teaching Torah. It's a Gemara Nedarim. You can't charge for teaching Torah. So says the Gemara that you're being paid because of Schar B'Tela. You're being compensated because you could have had a different job. So you're taking off from your other job in order to teach. So it's like your expenses. It's like your overhead. You're being paid not to teach. You're being compensated for your other job. Now, between me and you, the Rabbeim don't have another job anyway. So essentially, we are paying the Rabbeim because they agreed to not take another job and teach. So essentially, we're paying them for the job that they could have had. Now, the Rabbeim want to be paid more, but in the meantime, you don't have another job, so there's no excuse to not teach because you're not being paid for teaching anyway. You're being paid for the fact that you didn't take a different job. You're still unemployed. You still don't have any other job. Therefore, there's no excuse not to teach. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein says a brilliant idea, a brilliant thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, however, at the end of the day, what recourse do the Rebbeim have? So first of all, the Rebbeim have to go to a Beis Din. They have to try every possible means. We already cited a case where the Rebbeim would teach in the privacy of their own homes. They have pressure. They have ways of leveraging and putting pressure on the administration. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that the whole issue here is that you're not allowed to cause a loss to the children, and you're not allowed to be mevatel Torah. Now, we have a concept that bitula zehu kiyuma. Sometimes stopping to learn is the greatest, long-term, is the greatest guarantee that you'll continue learning. How well can a Rebbe teach if anyway he's under the stress and the pressure of not making ends meet? So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, what they could do is they can go to an Adam Gadol and they can assess the situation that there's absolutely no recourse, the administration is unresponsive, they're not moving, they're not being motivated to move, and we have to pressure them. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that if you have an unbiased opinion from an Adam Gadol, and they assess the only way to get the administration to move is by putting a little fire under them, is that to strike, to take off, then they're allowed to because bitula zehu kiyuma, because ultimately the children will learn more if the Rebbeim are compensated more. Because how can the Rebbe teach and prepare if he's worried about, if he can't make ends meet? So he's allowed to be mavatal in order to improve his lot, in order to teach the children better. So it has to be done with the proper assessment, it has to be done with the proper attitude, with the proper L'shem Shemayim, and then there would be grounds for bitula zehu kiyuma. So the letter of the law is that you can't cause the employer a loss. Perhaps din demachusa would require the employer to absorb a loss, but that certainly doesn't apply when we're talking about Bittul Torah. And therefore we have to come up with other leverages or other ways, other strategies that the Rebbeim could put pressure on the administration. And Rav Moshe Feinstein comes up with, even within the halacha of not being mevatel Torah, there's a concept of bitula zehu kiyuma. Now, this requires an etza from an Adam Gadol, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, and it has to be done with Yishuv Adas, and then you can strike a little bit for a day or two because of bitula zehu kiyuma. Rav Shlomo Zalman says the same thing. However, like we said before, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Aaron Cutler of Zichron Livracha both say that the tzibor has the requirement to make sure that the Rebbeim are compensated. It's a similar argument. We're going to, in closing, it's a very similar argument regarding doctors. Doctors have a mitzvah to cure, to heal. The doctors are also not being compensated for their actual work because it's a Shabbos Aveda. We talked about it. Restoring the person to health is like restoring the person's lost object. You can't charge for doing a mitzvah. You're being charged for your overhead. You're being charged for your medical malpractice insurance. You're being charged for your paying your fancy machines. That's why the doctors are being paid, and they're being paid for their tircha. Perhaps they're accepting upon themselves tremendous responsibility. They're being compensated for the tircha and for the responsibility that they're taking, but they have to cure. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says an amazing idea that if the doctors ever feel, well, we're obviously speaking about doctors not in a private practice, we're speaking about working in a clinic or working in a hospital, the doctors are allowed to strike, but only on condition that the mitzvah is being done, that at least as many doctors and nurses are still at their posts, that there shouldn't be a threat of pikuach nefesh, of sakonis nefashis. So you can have a well-run hospital, or you can have a hospital that's being run, you know, bare minimum. But it has to be operating at least on a bare minimum. As far as essential workers are concerned, there's a Tosefta in Bav Metzia, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Yud Gimel, that says that if you're the community bathhouse attendant, or the community barber, or the community baker, essentially opening a grocery store, so it's right before Yom Tov, you don't have the right to go home, because since you took the job, the community relies on you. So you would not be allowed to close your store early, because you put yourself in a position where you are supplying the community with their basic needs. So you cannot take off until you find a replacement. And if they made a condition ahead of time with the Besdin to certain times, or if they're being taken advantage of, then they have permission. But otherwise, under normal circumstances, the people in these critical hygienic or community need positions, grocers, barbers, bathhouse attendants, just maybe a gas pump, all of these things have to be kept operating because the community needs it and the community relies on you. Okay, so that's the end of this shiur. We devoted some extra time at the end. If anybody has any question or anything that they want to bring up, so I would love to hear what it is.